Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Celtic Soul Podcast with me, Andrew Millen. You're all very welcome to episode 19. My guest on the show will be former Celtic and Dundee player Barry Smith. This episode has been sponsored by Dial at Home Glasgow. Thanks to Susan McLeish for the continued support. Sunday, we kick off what could be a historical season, the Holy Grail, the 10 in a row. We should all be looking forward to jumping on a bus, setting sail, or boarding a plane from here, there and everywhere to join the thousands of Glasgow residents who follow the green and white to walk to Celtic Park to see the 9th Champions flag in a row raised above Celtic Park. Due to this scourge they call COVID-19, we cannot, but spare a thought for those Celtic fans who have died due to complications related to the virus and to the families who are grieving their loved ones. Wherever you are watching the game, keep safe, enjoy every kick of the ball while we wait to get back to our piece of paradise we call our seat inside the arena of legends. Those legends and icons who made history in the 60s and 70s, led by Billy McNeil to the first 9 in a row. Billy, a player who became captain and then manager on 2 occasions. Now they build statues to honour him. A true Celtic legend, a true Celtic icon. Scott Brown may not have lifted the European Cup, but he has led this bunch of Celtic players to 9 in a row, just like Billy. And now he, Neil Lennon and all the players start a journey to make their own piece of history. These may be strange times, unsure times, but this is our time to dream. Dream of being inside the stadium come the end of the season, to see Scott lift the trophy up high. Let the battle begin, let no imposters claim our history. Hail Caesar, hail Scott, hail Celtic. Barry Smith signed for Celtic in 1991 at the young age of 17. He would make his debut for the then manager, Liam Brady, when the club was struggling under the old board. With opportunities limited, he would depart for Dundee, where he would make a name for himself and become a bit of a legend and a Dundee Hall of Famer. Here's how I got on earlier when I chatted to Barry.
Hi, Barry. You're very welcome to the Celtic Soul Podcast. How have you found life in lockdown? Uncertain times. A lot of people talking about the future of football, careers on the line, and indeed the survival of football in the lower divisions in Scotland.
It's been tough for everyone in lockdown, you know, and a lot of people have lost loved ones. But, you know, I've been fortunate that my family's kept safe and they've, you know, stayed healthy. But, you know, hopefully we're coming through the other side of it now and we can look forward to getting on with, you know, life as normal as we can.
Your pal and fellow coach, Jim Duffy. Jim had a heart attack. How's Jim doing?
No, Jim's doing great now. You know, still in regular contact with him. You know, he had the heart attack, but he's fine now. I think that's maybe about 4 or 5 weeks, so he's really on the mend. I think I spoke to him last night and he said he was actually putting up a frame for a TV to sit in, so he's getting back to his normal self and he's really looking forward to getting back into the, you know, the season and getting the boys together for pre-season.
Is it going to be hard? Because obviously, as a Celtic fan, we know Celtic have plenty of money coming in. They've sold all their season books. in the lower divisions, how hard is it going to be? Because obviously finances are tight, and then test people for corona and basically to get them back on the playing field.
Thankfully, Dumbarton, you know, furloughed everyone. Even though the boys were out of contract, they looked after the players. And I think that's helped them in the sort of longer run, and a lot of the boys want to stay and repay them, the club, for, you know, looking after them in the difficult times. In terms of the testing, I think it will be very difficult. Dumbarton don't have their own training ground. They use a junior ground to train in. So to test a part-time player twice a week, someone that's out working throughout the week, I think it's going to be very tough. And there's going to have to be some sort of, you know, agreement that the players are doing the best they can. You know, nobody wants to go back to lockdown again. But given that we're trying to come out the other side of it, hopefully they can relax it a touch so that, you know, part-time players can get back to playing.
Yeah, it's funny because they won't be tested going onto a building site or going onto their office or whatever they do. And Dumbarton, first team I ever seen play Celtic, 1989. Your old manager, Tommy Bones, played in that game. It was the first glimpse I got of Tommy. Just, I've always had good memories. It's been a few seasons since, I think, since we played them, but we did draw them in the cup a couple of seasons ago at home. So I hope they got a good payday out of it. Now, the Premier League kicks off the weekend. Celtic are the bookies' favourite to make history, 10 in a row. Can you see Rangers or anyone else being able to stop Celtic?
Short and sweet, no. You know, I think it'll be tougher than any other season, given what's at stake. But I just think Celtic have been so strong. And obviously, Neil's got a good squad together again. He's looking to add to it. And I think, you know, if they get off to a good start, they'll take some catching to get to. But I think it'll be the toughest season yet, just given everything that's at stake for it.
I think so as well, because there's huge pressure going into every game, as you know, as a Celtic player, but especially with history on their shoulders now.
Yeah, but it's something that the players will look forward to as well. You know, what an achievement that will be, you know, to get to 10 in a row. You know, a lot of the players that are at Celtic enjoy that pressure and, you know, thrive on it, which maybe just get them over the line.
Now, our rivals across the city will be second favourites in the bookies. But I think Aberdeen are going to be much improved this year because of Johnny Hayes going back to the club. And if they can keep the current players together, and I was talking one or two gone, can you see Aberdeen or any other club pushing Rangers and putting pressure on them for the Champions League spot?
I think that there are quite a few squads that are coming together. And I certainly think that there'll be a few up there challenging, you know, for that second spot. I just think that Celtic will be too strong over the season. But if you look at Hibs, get a decent squad put together, Aberdeen, you know, obviously Rangers have added to what they had. So I think there'll be a few teams in there. Dundee United coming up. But I think in different circumstances, they would have, you know, threw a wee bit of money at the league as well. But given the circumstances, they probably don't have that spare money, you know, from their American owner. But it should be a good season, and it will certainly be interesting to get into that top six for a lot of the teams.
Yeah, Dundee United, it's strange when manager leaves after he gets to promote to go back and manage in the first division.
It was a strange one. I don't think anyone's seen it coming. But obviously, Robbie's got a lot of allegiance to Hearts and felt it was the right thing to do. Whether he can work under a sporting director, I'm not sure, because that might have been one of the reasons that he left. I'm not sure if that's the case, but it just seems strange to leave a team that you've got promoted and that have got aspirations of doing well in the Premiership to go to a team that, you know, it was pretty much 100% sure that they were going to get relegated no matter what happened.
Yeah, it's funny you should say everyone thought they were going to get relegated, and they have a few, Bob. The club seems to be run quite well from a business point of view, but John Hart has been on the show, and he was saying, like, from a football point of view, they just couldn't appoint a manager to turn it around, you know. And he kind of blamed Craig Levein as well. He was saying he knows the league. So I know Hearts I feel hard done by as the Partick Thistle, but there's not a lot of sympathy because, you know, there was plenty of time for them to get a couple of results.
You can always say that in the last eight games that you're going to survive. But over the previous 28 games, or whatever it was, 30 games, did they actually look like they were going to do that? Was there any change? And I'm not sure there was. The ones I really feel sorry for are Thistle, to be honest, because they had a game in hand over the team that was sitting bottom. You know, you can't say that they're going to win it, but there is an opportunity to get themselves off the bottom with that one win. So I found that a really tough one for them. But I think over the course of the season, Hearts were bottom for good spells of it. So, you know, was that going to change? Nobody can say. But it's where they were at the end of the season.
It was indeed. Now, we'll go back to the league before we finish. But I'm of a vintage to remember you playing. I remember I remember those dark, barren days following Celtic. But can you give some of the younger listeners maybe just a bit of introduction to yourself, you know, your background growing up in Paisley, signing for Celtic and so forth?
No, you know, I grew up in Paisley, played for some local boys clubs, ended up at Barrhead Boys Club for maybe 4 or 5 years. And from there, I signed for Celtic Boys Club under-16s. And I was fortunate to get the opportunity to go full-time after that. I played for a season at Giffen up North, which was a sort of feeder club at the time for in between under-16s and then the reserve team. I played for a season there whilst playing the West reserve team at Celtic. And then after, I think it was about 4 or 5 months, I get get promoted into the first team to play. I mean, they were shorter players. I think that was maybe the only reason I get a chance at that time. But they were going through a tough time. But for me to play, put the hoops on and play with Celtic was a dream for me. You know, I got that opportunity. I was at Falkirk, made my debut, coming on as a sub, and then maybe played about 4 or 5 games at the end of that season. But it always seemed to be, you know, it was the tail end of seasons that I got a chance, which was always difficult because you can do well up to the end of the season, but then come the close season, there's always new players come in and, you know, the managers get different ideas. There was, you know, a number of changes of managers while I was there as well. But again, I felt very fortunate to put on the hoops, and any time I wore them, you know, I wanted to make sure I gave everything that I had. And I played in 2 Old Firm games, which, you know, were the highlights of, you know, well, no, just playing in the Old Firm games are, you know, a massive thing. Unfortunately, we drew one and lost one, but, you know, to play in an Old Firm game was an achievement for myself, you know, so something that I'm proud of playing in.
Yeah, just to put the club into perspective at the time, Liam Brady was your first manager that you played under. Now, is it true that Liam was often, you know, had to play with the reserves?
Yeah. He actually played as a centre-back, believe it or not, in some reserve games. Liam was, you know, an unbelievable player. You know, he was an excellent player. And at the stage he was in his career, he could have played anywhere just because, you know, he was still relatively fit, but just his knowledge of the game and understanding of the game, you know, could see him play any position. So I was lucky enough to probably play in a back four alongside him. But, you know, he gave me my chance. He gave me my first opportunity to play in the first team. So, you know, I was delighted at that time.
Yeah, Liam's time, obviously, frustrating time for everyone, fans, players, you know, with the old board there. But over here, Liam's he's a hero in Irish football. What a player. And I'm lucky enough to get... We have a podcast over here called The Stand, which is another old football player, Eamon Dunphy presents. And Liam is on it as a regular. And, you know, no matter what he's calling it, it's Italian football,
yeah,
Irish football, the Premiership, his knowledge is just unbelievable. And when I hear people, you know, kind of downplay him when he was a Celtic, yes, it probably wasn't the wisest move he ever made, but guy's an iconic legend over here. What a footballer he was. And even with the reserves, for a young kid, it must be nice to line up beside him.
Oh, I know. It was brilliant. You know, and you can, even though he wasn't a centre-back, you learn of, you know, his enthusiasm for the game, you know, and just his knowledge of the game on the pitch. And I always say that when I was growing up, reserve football was playing with experienced players, and that's where you learned. You know, I think the kids get so much coaching now that they get overcoached and don't think for themselves. But the experienced players let you know what you were doing right, what you were doing wrong, and you only had to be told once. And you knew either to keep doing it or not to do it again, you know. So it was great to play alongside them.
It's funny, Frank McAvaney was on a couple of weeks ago, and he basically said that kids, you know, they're overcoached, and sometimes what fits one doesn't fit all, and maybe a good, you know, a good run in the park, fitness, get the fitness up, because he said he looks at players now and they can't do 90 minutes because the sports scientist is telling them you've done enough.
That's strange coming from Frank. No, he's right. You know, I do think they're overcoached. There's too much. Players don't think for themselves. They play against the same players in Scotland from the age of 9 to their 16. Now, they know the players inside out. But then when they go into the senior team or they go into the first team, then they've got to think for themselves. And that's where they find it very difficult, that, you know, change from academy football into first team football. I think, you know, you need to get back to letting them go out and play. But I don't think they play enough games. I know there's sports science that says they shouldn't be playing this amount of games, but it didn't do us guys any harm. You know, we were playing maybe Saturday and Monday every week. But you were fit and you were learning the game while you were playing and getting fit. So that was the ideal way ahead for me.
Another player that you had the pleasure of playing with, loved training as well. So much so, Liam Brady made him live with him for 6 months. Paul Bourne.
Oh, Burnley. good lad, Burnley. You know, he's one of a kind, I would like to say. You know, he's just one of the guys. He was a lovable rogue, I think, you know. But, you know, I know he spent a wee bit of time in the States, I think, and, you know, he was doing well for himself. So, no, a good guy. Didn't like the running, knowing that, having played behind him. But, you know, he should have done a lot better at Celtic, you know, but everybody has. But myself should probably have done better at Celtic as well. But, you know, everybody has their reasons behind why they never. Unfortunately, Paul never did as well as what he should have, like myself.
Well, I had the pleasure of having to fly home with him from Thailand when we got went into lockdown. So he told me a few stories. I couldn't repeat them, but
I'm quite sure he did.
But he did. He loved his time at Celtic. And like you say, he said, you know, he could have done better. But he still got, same as you, he got the line out against Rangers. He scored a couple of goals. For most of us as fans, you know, doing that hoops and playing a charity game, you know, and pay money to run out, that's enough for us. So, count yourself so lucky.
Yeah, I know.
Now, you did say you could have done better than that, but maybe your time came too early because you certainly did well at Dundee. Was it frustrating as a young player? Because obviously when you get older and you start coaching, you have a lot more knowledge of the game and you have a lot more knowledge of how it works. But how frustrating was it, you know, when you get a start so young, you know, not to be in the team regularly, and you're looking at other players and you're thinking, yeah, I'm as good as him or I'm better than him. Is it mentally challenging?
I just think for myself, you know, being at Celtic was a massive thing anyway. And I wasn't happy just being there because I wanted to play in the first team. But it was a massive thing to be signed full time at Celtic for myself. So I probably never had as much confidence in my own ability at that stage, you know, as a young kid, and you were always waiting for the next person to come in the door and take your position, which, you know, given a few years down the line, or when I went to Dundee, I made the position my own, and anyone that came in that was in my position, then my thoughts were, well, he's not taking my position away, whereas at Celtic, it probably was, well, he's here to take my position, you know, rather than putting up a bigger fight for it, and that's probably the one thing that, you know, let me down there. I should have had more confidence and more my own ability to say, no, I'm here to stay. But, you know, unfortunately, that never happened and, you know, I moved on and, you know, a good career at Dundee, which was probably the best move at the time for me. Know that I agreed with Tommy at the time, but Tommy knew best. What was, you know, Tommy was that type of guy that he knew what was best for me. And in the long term, it certainly ended up the best thing that I did. You know, what happened to me in my football career.
When you started to make your name at Dundee and you started to push on in your career, I think a lot of Celtic fans, they thought, you know, well, maybe we let him go too early. Why did we not give him another chance? Because I've spoken to people because I told them you were coming on the show and they were of the view that maybe we just let him go too early or maybe we didn't give him the chance to mature. But it's probably easier to do it, and no disrespect to Dundee, probably easier to do it away from Celtic, and especially as someone who grew up wanting to play with Celtic. Just the added pressure, isn't it?
That's very kind of, you know, some the supporters, but when it comes down to it, you get a great player in Jackie McNamara that came in, you know, just maybe a couple of months before I left, and that's maybe, you know, he had a tremendous career at Celtic and, you know, thoroughly justified Tommy signing him at the time. So, you know, I don't really look back and regret anything, but you look back and think you could maybe have done better. I don't regret what I did at the time, and I think the move to Dundee came at the right time. Obviously, Celtic get Morten Vikos as well, who for me was a terrific signing for Celtic at the time as well.
That's right, yeah. Morten came in as part of the deal when you went the other way. Now, let's just look back at your time at Celtic. You mentioned you played against Rangers. One of them was the one-all draw when none of us were allowed in. which is, I suppose, still surreal. They're not letting us back in much now either. They're only giving us a couple of tickets now, so maybe time hasn't changed that much. Yeah, we're back in the stadium. You also played against Aberdeen in the League Cup. You played under a number of managers. You know, the old board were there. And from talking to Paul, you know, he said, you know, the younger players, we just wanted to play football. We knew there was something going on, but we weren't going out and protesting or anything like that. So then that happens, and then your Fergus McCann comes in, Tommy comes in, you're released. Did you ever think back then, you know, when you were leaving Celtic, that the impact Fergus McCann would have and Tommy and the foundations that they would build, not only the stadium, but the team, to go on and compete in the Champions League and dominate in Scotland?
No, you know, if I always remember playing in front of the jungle, and there was only maybe about 2,000, 3,000 people in the jungle at the time. And, you know, to go from that to the stadium that's been built now, at that stage, the younger players were quite sheltered from it, sheltered from everything that was going on. But you probably would never in your wildest dreams have imagined, you know, how big Celtic had become again, you know, after a good few years in the doldrums, you know. I mean, no one knew who Fergus McCann was, but I think he got the right manager in at the time, bringing Tommy, because he knew what Celtic was about, and, you know, he was Celtic through and through. And you couldn't have had a better man at the helm, you know, to guide them out into what they've become now.
Tommy, unlucky not to win a league, but even when he left, you know, he come back. Tommy would have done any job in Celtic Park. He would have been coaching youth team. He was just such an iconic figure, and taken way too early. Ben, across the road where you made your name, when we went up to play Dundee United, the Tommy, the emotions of that night. And I think anyone that Tommy met, be it a fan or player or, you know, in management, I think he did leave that on Mr. Celtic. And,
yeah. You know, so. Well, I think even when he was a manager, he did all the jobs anyway. You know, from cleaning to coaching the kids to coaching the first team. You know, he just did everything. He just, you know, loved Celtic and loved being about the place. And he was a, you know, a terrific role model for every day he was there. You know, because you would like to think that you had that much feeling for a club that he had, you know, and he just wanted Celtic to do well.
Yeah, and we could go on and talk about Tommy all day. Pleasure of interviewing his son one day, and who's not into football. And the stories he told me about Tommy dragging him to games in Barcelona, and just brilliant. Like, as I said, we could talk about Tommy all day. No, I want to move on to your time at Dundee. As you said, Malcolm Vicars left. You arrived, you became a legend, fans' favourite, captain, manager. To go from, I suppose, being a bit power player of a Celtic, to go to a place where you feel that you're really wanted, and to go on and have the career you had with them is brilliant. But what was it like coming back to play against Celtic, to be in the away dressing room?
It wasn't very good to get sent off. I think the first time we went back, I pulled Mark Butchell down after about 19 minutes and got sent off. So it wasn't a great coming back, but that was obviously strange. You know, the dressing room thing wasn't a big thing because the reserves got changed in their way dressing room anyway. So it wasn't such a big thing, but it was just going back to Celtic Park was obviously massive for myself, you know, and playing with a different team and enjoying. I mean, you don't enjoy getting beat, but the atmosphere at Celtic Park sank to none. So, you know, it's good, a great stadium to go back and play in. You know, been fortunate to have won there with Dundee as well. So, you know, it's always good to go back to Celtic Park.
Did you play in the game where Martin O'Neill's first season, the end of the season, 2-0?
Yeah, Caballero, I think it was, it scored.
And you ruined that weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, don't blame me.
But did you take anything up there? No disrespect to Dundee. Celtic is this iconic club, especially when we were growing up, from the Lions right up to the Centenary team and that. And then obviously it did hit a lull, and then to what it is now. Did you bring anything up to Dundee when you became captain from the captains you played under, or do you just have to make it your own? Or is there influence?
I think you've just got to make it your own. The one thing for myself, when I went to Dundee, a lot of boys left Celtic, you know, the reserves, and didn't go and play anywhere else. And I just wanted to make sure when I went there, I went and had a good career. And, you know, I was fortunate Jim Duffy took a chance on us. He was a manager at the time at Dundee, took a chance and, you know, it worked out for us. He made us captain the following season, which only being there a year, you know, was excellent for myself. But you've got to put your own stamp on it. And I think anybody that's worked under me or played in the same team as me, I think they know what they're going to get. They knew what they were going to get off me. I wouldn't say I was a shouter all the time, but folks sort of reacted to, you know, things that I did. You know, if we were having a tough day, then we were getting our backs up and we were fighting for everything. And they knew that would come for me straight away. And so I took that into being captain and then into being a manager as well. Everybody knows what's expected of them.
Now, we all know what a Celtic Rangers derby is like, how big it is. Ramon Vega on the show on Tuesday, and he was saying, you know, like he played in the Arsenal Spurs game. He said, but the Celtic Rangers game was just the noise and the whole build-up, and he said it was just phenomenal. But how does the Dundee derby, like, because the stadiums are beside each other. I'm sure if the fans drink together on that, like, it is one of the strangest local derbies because it's basically on top of each other.
You know, it's as strange as they come. We used to meet in our own stadium and walk down to, you know, the away game as such. Because it's just down the street. But it was just weird walking in amongst all the fans as you're going to play in a derby, because having played at Celtic, in a Celtic Rangers derby, that would never happen. So it was strange to do that. The atmosphere, you know, it's a great atmosphere, the Dundee derby. But, you know, you can't compare it to, you know, Celtic Rangers. That's just, you know, impossible. What I would say is winning the derby means as much to the Dundee and Dundee United fans as what it would to a Celtic fan. It still means as much. It's just the atmosphere's maybe not as intense after the game. I'm not saying every supporter, but a lot of the supporters will drink the same pubs and will go back to the same pubs and they'll sit and have a beer with each other, which is obviously a massive difference to, you know, an Old Firm derby.
Sure is. No, I've often wondered, because there's a lad for the fans here to do more than 90 minutes, Kieran. He'd gone to all the derbies. He went and he'd done all the Scottish ones, he'd done English ones, he went to Argentina. He used to write a piece now, you know. He doesn't do it anymore because he's married. He's lucky if he gets to the Celtic Rangers derby now. But he done it, and he did write about the Dundee one, and he did say that. He said it's kind of strange seeing the kind of fans. I mean, he didn't mention that the teams walked down the road to get, down from the stadium. I wasn't aware of that, but when you think of it, it's logical. But I know you moved on, you played in Iceland then, but you've coached and managed, like, throughout Scotland. You must have some knowledge, for a relatively young person, you must have some knowledge of the divisions, the players, the club setups.
I think myself and Jim are actually only two of the, I'm not sure if we're the only two managers, but that have coached in every division, which you get to know players and you get to know, you know, the up-and-coming players, which is always good. But, I look at it and I've, you know, had success as a manager pretty much at all the clubs apart from Brechin. Success comes in different varieties, obviously, you know, whether you're winning leagues or whether you're, you know, getting promoted or you're achieving what the club set out to do. You know, it's been, you know, relatively successful for myself. And at the moment, I'm in with Jim as assistant manager at Dumbarton. And, you know, I'm just enjoying taking a wee step back and begin to learn again, because the majority of the jobs I've took are clubs that are, you know, fighting at the bottom end, and you're pretty much relying on yourself to get them out of hole. And it puts a big strain on you at times. So I'm enjoying just, you know, going in and coaching and not having to deal with a lot of the other stuff that comes with the manager's job.
Are you still doing anything with Dundee?
I am at the moment. I'm taking under-16s at the academy. Just felt it was right to, you know, go a bit of spare time to go back to a club that, you know, I love as well, and help out the academy was a good thing for myself to go back and give something back to them. So I'm in there at the moment. They're obviously Dundee are going through another difficult time with finances, and they're looking to cut the academy. So it's a bit up in the air at the moment to where they're going with the academy. So we'll just have to wait and see how that pans out.
Is Gordon Dragons involved there now?
Yeah, Gordon's, I think he's titles technical director, but I don't think he's a lot of involvement with the first team. It's more coaching the coaches in the academy and, you know, trying to progress the academy in a better direction what they already were going. I mean, throughout the lockdown, he's, you know, been in touch with all the coaches and, you know, he's just trying to make everything better and a wee bit smoother and different ideas. And a lot of the things, you know, are things that you wouldn't think of. He's brought a lot of gymnastics and karate, you know, things that are going to make the players a wee bit more supple and stronger, but something that's different. And not a lot of teams use that to develop the kids as well. So he's definitely brought, you know, something to the table, which you would expect with Gordon's experience.
Maybe he could bring that karate. He could teach his old mate Neil Lennon a bit, because just in case we get hearts in the cup or something.
That would be interesting.
So, well, you know, anything can happen in management in Scotland. Now, as we said earlier on, right, it's tough. It's tough managing in Scotland. You know, you're after speaking there about cutting budgets and Dundee walking on the tight limit. As a Celtic fan, I don't really care about outside of it. Celtic's my team. I want Celtic to win. And people say, oh, for the good of the game and that, you know. Most fans want that team to win, you know. And Rangers fans will be no different, or Aberdeen fans. But as someone that's been in, you know, in the game and seen us dominate, and before that Rangers, unless money comes in, the Aberdeens and the Dundees and the Dundee Uniteds, the Hibs and the Hearts, they're not going to be able to compete with Celtic, because Celtic just now have just that financial muscle and they ain't going to give it up easy.
No, definitely not. Yeah, I think because Celtic's been so successful and they've got a lot of money through the Champions League, and on the back of that you get more sponsorship and better deals, and I mean it's very difficult to compete with it. What you've got to hope is that, you know, for the clubs further down the line, that, you know, they're able to build squads strong enough that they can challenge and put up a sustainable challenge. With finances being cut, it becomes more difficult at the moment. From a part-time level, at Dumbarton can't survive. They struggle to survive close seasons where there's nobody paying through the gate, you know, and that's only now for about 4 or 5 weeks. But they've went 4 months this year without anyone paying through the gates, and it's been a real struggle. I could imagine it's a real struggle for them to, you know, still have finances there that can pay for, you know, the staff that's there, or, you know, anything, the bills that have to be paid. I think everybody will have to start cutting their cloth accordingly. But that's easier said than done, because everybody wants to, you know, challenge for the title and get promoted. But if you're then adding the other expenses of, you know, the testing and stuff like that, I think some clubs might think, is it viable to actually run? Because it's no feasible for them to run the club under these circumstances, which would be a shame, you know, to lose clubs. And I think that's where, you know, without getting political, the government have to look after clubs to a certain degree, and not just through the furlough system, but actually when we come out of it, because the clubs still don't have any money coming in. And smaller businesses, not just football clubs, but smaller businesses will all be struggling because there's no money coming in.
I think the government, but and it's the same in Ireland, the League of Ireland sometimes gets overlooked, and especially the lower divisions in Scotland. I think the government really has to, you know, we're coming out now, hopefully we'll come out of this safely, this coronavirus, but a lot of people are out of work, you know, and a lot of small businesses who would normally sponsor their local team, be it match balls or an advert in the programme, they won't be able to. So but I think the government needs to realise the part that the local football team and the big football teams, the part they play in everybody's life as a social outlet, and even the kids getting out and playing grassroots football. Sometimes that gets overlooked by politicians, but they really need to step up to the plate now and start pushing, even if they're local councillors or MPs. And I know we don't want to get political, but they need to step up to the plate now, because football has a huge role to play in society.
Definitely. It's a community. It goes beyond, you know, the football club. But you're talking about if they don't allow fans back in, you think the amount of travel and support that maybe go to the local pubs or restaurants while they're there, they're all missing out in that trade based on the fact that there's no fans. So that trade then impacts the community, not just the football club, because the football club's not getting the money, but the trade run about the stadium and stuff like that don't get money. So it affects everybody. And that's where, you know, I think that the government's really got to look after, you know, not just, as I say, it's not just the football clubs, it's the community as a whole that's impacted. But football is massive in the community, and most communities in Scotland, you know, the number one sport in Scotland. So it has to be looked at slightly differently from everything else.
And as well as that, you know, football is a working class sport. There's amateur teams, and the amount of time that people put into the teams to coach kids and even coach adults, pub teams, whatever it may be. Now, during the lockdown, this thing was muted again about Celtic and Rangers reserves you know, the under 21 team playing in the lower divisions. Now, in theory, to me, it was a great idea because I get to go and see the reserves playing against men. Like, I looked at Luke O'Connell the other day in the friendly for Hibs. He can play for the Republic of Ireland. He was in Mick McCarthy's squad. And I just thought he was brilliant. And he'd be a player, if he's not making it in the first team, this would be great to go and see him. But then I thought, Celtic do give something back to the lower teams when they give out players on loan to develop them, but also to help these teams. And that would be lost then. So there's no middle ground. It's either you have the reserves playing and you get a few quid now, but down the line when that money dries up, you'll not be getting any of our players to strengthen your team.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a tough one. Obviously, for Celtic Rangers, they get their youth kids playing against men and learning against experienced pros, which is ideal for them. For the lower league clubs, they then don't get the players. I mean, I took Regan Hendry to Raith Rovers, you know, and I know he's no longer there. He's still at Raith. But he was a tremendous talent that had a bad injury and maybe that hindered him at Celtic. But we wouldn't have got him if he was playing in the Colts, because he would have easily have played in, you know, that team. But he actually get more experience because he didn't play for four or five games and had to work himself into the team. So he then got an education that it's no, you know, all shining lights, you know, when you go to lower league teams. It's, you have to work as hard as everybody else and you have to make sure that you're doing the right things. You know, for me, it's probably the best thing for Celtic Rangers that they have Colts, because they can get their young players together playing against experienced players and getting the feeling for playing for Celtic in stadiums. But for the lower league teams, it's a massive loss to them because they won't be able to get these players on loan, which then makes it difficult financially for them, because Celtic are generally quite good with, you know, how they go about loaning out players as well.
Yeah, no, I've often wondered, Tommy Johnson said to me that if a kid is released by Celtic and he's been out on loan, or even if he's just come through the youth team, he said he's going to find another club because of the grounding he's had at Celtic. Now, it may not be at that level, but he will find the club and clubs will be aware of him. Like Callum McGregor, I think it was the Notts County, one of the finest players, you know, in Scotland and possibly the Scottish international team. So, like, there is something there, but it's one that I suppose will be debated again and again. But as it, just coming from a purely football point of view, I do think that Celtic need to, and the Rangers and the Aberdeens, that they need to give something back to the smaller clubs, because if not, there'll be no clubs, especially after this. And the government need to give as well. I'm glad you brought that up, because they do need to step up. Now, as I said, season kicks off this weekend. I need a few predictions, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm not a betting man.
My old mate from across the city, Stevie G, the wonderful Stevie G, and his beautiful Rangers team will head up to Aberdeen. I want Johnny Hayes to do us a favour. And fair play to Johnny, he went up to play for nothing. There's not many footballers would have done that.
No, certainly not. Tough one to call on the first day of the season. Tough place to go the first game of the season. But this season is different for any other because they've not really played a lot of games. Me personally, I think it'll be won and lost in the first 15, 20 minutes. I think if somebody gets that go ahead, then they'll win the game.
No fans in the stadium. Who does it help?
I think it'll probably help Aberdeen more than it'll help Rangers. I always believe that big-time players need the fans. You know, if Rangers are going to be really throwing a challenge at Celtic, then, you know, a lot of their players might thrive on the fact that they should be playing in front of full crowds. Aberdeen might be used to playing in front of lesser crowds anyway, for as much as at home they normally get 14,000-15,000, but it's no 15,000-60,000. I mean, a lot of players as well are quite fortunate they can shut off, so a lot of them don't realise the fans are there and the abuse that they're normally getting. Or I was quite lucky. I was able to switch off, so it didn't matter if there was a crowd there or not. So it will definitely affect some players worse, more than others.
Barry, you're sitting on the fence down there. I'll be happy with a draw today. I'll be very happy with a draw. Now, on paper, we've got a handy one. Celtic take on Hamilton, the team that are tipped to go down every year and managed to stay up. So it's damage limitations, I think. Celtic would have had a better pre-season, better prepared, they played better teams. And Hamilton, again, they wouldn't have a huge budget. I don't know who they've brought in. I don't know if they've got a couple of players in on loan, or because the transfer window seems to be so quiet.
I think they've lost a lot of players, and I don't think they've brought in as many. Again, it's a tough ask on you. Celtic part in the first day of the season, Celtic using the big pitch and using it to its full value. You know, I kind of say buy Celtic, but I don't think it'll be a, as I say, I think big time players like fans being at the pitch and that motivates them. So I think they might find it, you know, a wee bit more difficult trying to get out of that friendly mode. And once you're 2-0 up, you know, if you get to 2-0, can you push on to make it 3-4, or whether you, there's no crowd pushing you on. So, you know, I think it'll be closer than what most people would think.
Just, I hope you're wrong, Barry. I'm getting out for the first time with the lads. I haven't seen them since we were in Thailand in March. First time for a few points with the lads. I normally go to Glasgow. So if we don't do well, and over here the pubs aren't open. We have to book a restaurant. But I hope I'm not paying for a roast beef dinner for nothing. Barry, it's been lovely to chat to you. It's the first time we chatted, and hopefully we'll have you on again, because your wealth of knowledge of all of Scottish football. Hopefully you come back, as I said, on the podcast again. Or maybe you'll come when it's safe to do for one of our live events. Come in for a chat on one of the live events and give us the wealth of your knowledge. And you know yourself, the live events, you can say stuff you can't say on air.
Thanks very much.
Barry, stay safe, pal. And as I say to everyone, hail, hail.
Thanks for having us, Owen. Thank you.
Thanks to Barry for taking time out to chat to me today. It was great to look forward to the weekend's game and the season ahead with him. We are now in the testing phase of the new app and the members area, which will house all our digital editions of the fanzine. And both should be up and running by mid-August. We will also produce a weekly newsletter, which will drop into your inbox every week and keep you up to date with what's going on. If you like what we are doing, you can support us for the price of a pint. Visit our website, CelticFanzine.com. And on the homepage, you can click into the icon and donate on a one-off basis or sign up to support us on a weekly, monthly, quarterly or yearly basis. We promise no unwanted Google adverts on our website or articles, and no unwanted advert interruptions on our podcast. Keeping it real and keeping it independent. Your support will help us to continue to produce quality, independent fan journalism, podcasts, video content and free live Celtic fan events. If you are not in a position to financially support us at this time, don't worry. We will still deliver the same high-quality content to all fans free. Thank you for your continued support. You can also support us by clicking into CelticFanzine.com/shop/ and buying a bit of merchandise, a fanzine, or taking out a subscription. Prices start at a fiver. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening and your continued support. And thanks to Ronan McQuillan, our producer, once again. The podcast is available on all platforms. Hit the subscribe or follow buttons and you will never miss an episode. Alternatively, you can visit CelticFanzine.com/podcasts/ where you will find all episodes. Please follow More Than 90 Minutes on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, where we will have offers of merchandise, a couple of competitions where you can win merchandise subscriptions, and when we're back up and running at the games, we'll stick in some tickets. Thanks again to our sponsor, Doyle Home Glasgow. If your business or Celtic Supporters Club would like to sponsor an episode or advertise in the fanzine or on the website, please get in contact. You can email us at info@celticfanzine.com. Keep the comments coming in and let us know your story or who you would like us to chat to on the show. Well, folks, we're on staycation next week, so there'll be no podcast, and we'll be back on Friday the 14th of August with episode 20, when there will be so much to talk about with the first couple of games out of the way. Enjoy Flag Day on Sunday. Let's hope we get a good performance and 3 points, and that Aberdeen and Johnny Hayes can do us a favour and put one over the Rangers in Pittodrie. Keep the faith and stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.